For dentists in America, a good chunk of their history is in a small, white, 200-year-old house on the lazy main street of Bainbridge, Ohio, population 1,012.
And it is in this room that primarily everything took place. He had his medical office here, the dental office, his school.
It's now the Dr. John Harris Dental Museum, and its curator, Cherry Miller, is leading me toward the front room.
In 1928, the American Dental Association designated this the cradle of dentistry because out of this first school, this first class of 10 students, one of the students, which happened to be Chafin Harris, which was Dr. John Harris's brother, went to Baltimore, Maryland, and founded the first dental college in the United States. Another student, Dr. James Taylor, went to Cincinnati and founded the Cincinnati College of Dental Surgery. So those were the first two dental colleges in the United States, and they both came from this school.
Bainbridge, Ohio.
That's right.
From this very room, in fact. But it looks more like a 19th century sitting room than it does a historic medical school, except for a wooden cabinet of dental equipment on one wall. Bookwork took place at a common table. A rocking chair sits diagonally next to a south window. The more natural light the dentist had to see inside a patient's mouth, the better. There was no electricity. The dentist would place a log underneath the chair's rockers to keep the patient still. That must have been quite a challenge, since there was nothing like today's sterilizers or anesthetics either.
Perhaps the very rudimentary way of doing sterilization would be boiling or pouring alcohol over them, and soap and water and so forth. And for extractions, I think perhaps, who knows what they use, perhaps some kind of whiskey or something, or just grin and bear it.
Actually, most dentists of the early 1800s had no office at all. They were itinerant dentists, men who went from town to town setting up shop and tending to patients. Their repertoire tended to be pretty narrow.
They focused as primarily on dentistry of what they knew at that time, which was mostly extractions, perhaps plugging teeth in some way, or even making some kind of dentures.
We go back to the barber surgeons and the blacksmiths and so forth who made their own instruments. And jewelers and goldsmiths became involved in dentistry. The fine instruments they used on the watches and things like that, were appropriate for dental use.
Dr. John Heisen is the head of archives for the National Dental Museum at the University of Maryland.
There's a lot of crossover here, but dentistry is not only a science, it's an art form. And I guess that's the difference, really, that distinguishes it from medicine, because of the technical work that's being done, the very fine mechanical work that's being done. As a matter of fact, at one point they called it mechanical dentistry was a term that was used many, many years ago.
And with the closer ties to medical standards and practices came changes to the nature of dental education. Dentists were becoming doctors of dental science.
In the 1920s, the so-called Guy's Report came out. Guy's was a biochemist at Columbia, and he was working with a foundation that was trying to upgrade the status of dentistry. And at that point, and at some point there, say, and if you weren't an affiliate of a university, you lost your A credit rating and your A rating. And that was sort of the demise of the proprietary dental schools. Before that, prior to that time, say 1920s, there were quite a few proprietary dental schools.
Heisen says when the proprietary dental schools went away, so did the itinerant dentists. Some of them were actually quite skilled, but he says there were more than a few charlatans in practice. People up to the 20th century expected to grow old and lose their teeth. To be sure, many people didn't have to wait to grow old to lose them. If they took care of their teeth at all, it was with sticks that they chewed or picks to get the food particles out, and ash or pumice as a sort of primitive toothpaste. Cherry Miller says false teeth go far back in history, even beyond George Washington's wooden choppers, and dentures even became a status symbol of sorts in the 19th century.
There is vulcanized rubber. There is silver, gold.
Ivory, porcelain.
Yes. Many, many different kinds of of teeth. This box that holds this denture looks almost as if when you opened it, you should find a fine brooch. That would be a disappointment, I think.
Even as dental care began to modernize into what we know today, tooth loss was the norm. In 1960, people over the age of 60 on average had only 7 of their original teeth left. But children of that era were already learning to brush their teeth regularly, and fluoridated water was helping change dentistry's focus.
Dental disease is becoming a disease of adults and the elderly.
Dr. Don Mays is a consultant for the dental benefits industry. As dentistry evolved from replacing teeth to preserving teeth, people became more familiar with the dentist's office and with the accompanying bills. Mays says dental insurance started a lot like medical insurance in the middle of the last century as extra compensation for workers who couldn't be paid with more cash because of wage freezes.
The unions were looking for benefits, and during the war, people couldn't give increase in salaries, so they gave increase in benefits. They negotiated medical benefits, and of course, they were very popular, and that became a standard then in American industry for medical benefits to be provided by the employer. Then during the go-go years, they were looking for more benefits, and the unions negotiated dental benefits.
But Mays cautions that, strictly speaking, dental insurance isn't insurance at all. Dentistry is too predictable for insurers.
Low-cost, high-frequency are generally what dental benefits are designed to pay for. We can take any population and measure it, their need, dental needs, but you take a group of 1,000 medical patients and you can't tell which one's going to have appendicitis or brain tumor or kidney problems or whatever. You can predict actuarially, but you can't actually measure. In dental, you could look in the mouths and with a few minor variations pretty well predict what your exact cost would be to fix that population up.
So it's unlikely that we'll ever see a workable plan that covers our teeth and the rest of our bodies simultaneously. But archivist Dr. John Heisen says medicine and dentistry are as close as they've ever been, even if they'll probably stay separate.
And I think most physicians recognize that dentistry has a place. And, look at all your buildings now. You have medical and dental offices all in the same building. And you get a lot of cross-referrals. And I think most physicians are very comfortable with the fact that dentistry is doing a good job.
And that is a far cry from the traveling blacksmith jeweler dentist with a bottle of whiskey for the pain. For Smile Healthy, I'm Tom Rogers.